welcome to the FTN NBA Podcast with your hosts, Adam Pfeiffer and Joe Metz. Presented by the FTN Network, this two-man fast break runs you through the best cash and tournament options for every game on today's slate.
Welcome back to another episode of the FTN NBA Podcast. I am not Adam Pfeiffer. As you can tell, I don't have the Morgan Freeman as voice of FTN, but I am your co-host, his co-host, Joe Metz of FTN. With my co-host, Zach Graham, the great Kweisenberg, we are excited to be back for another off-season episode. And if you guys missed the first one, we essentially talked about how we are going to approach the podcast going forward, transition from a DFS-centered podcast with just a podcast every night for the slate at hand, and transition it more to a 30,000-foot view of the NBA, covering transactions, free agency, the draft, betting, season-long, and some DFS to make it more all-encompassing and more of a calendar, all-around calendar podcast. So before we introduce our guest, Zach, how you doing?
Doing well, Joe. Glad to be back with you. I mean, it's the eve of the draft, right?
Yep.
Like, there's for the rest of us, we've been waiting for this for a long time. You, I know, could really care less in terms of your fandom. But, you know, for teams that were out in the regular season and you know, my Spurs losing in the play-in games, I'm excited for it, man. Lottery territory for my team is kind of uncharted waters for me. And I'm hoping we're not down here too long, but the draft as a whole is really intriguing to me this year, and I'm excited to get into it.
Yeah. See, for me, lottery territory, being out of it now is foreign territory over the last 3 years, because I'm used to the Joe Alexander at 7 or 8 overall, Yi Jian Lian, like the slew of just useless first-round picks.
Yeah.
Feels Brandon good. Brandon Jennings sandwich in there, though. Yeah, it feels good. Trust me, I feel great right now as an NBA fan. This is a special podcast. Obviously, if you are an FTN NBA or Diamond subscriber, you're familiar with the infamous Dream Stream. It wasn't necessarily our choice, but a third host was kind of forced into this podcast. He's been pretty upset since the second round of the Eastern Conference Finals. But my good friend, Stefano Vaccarino, is here with us to round out the Dream Stream on the airwaves today. Steph, how you doing?
What's up, boys? I was curious. So I stopped paying attention. Who won the NBA championship? I don't know.
I had no idea.
Yeah. What's up? We got a dream pod. I love it. I'm thank you for having me on. I'm excited. It's always a pleasure to be on with both of you. Gentlemen, Joe, I see you radiating right now, still off that Bucks championship. I'm not mad or anything or salty. I'm happy for you. Let's get this going.
Yeah, I love it. So Steph, you know, you, much like me, I guess our teams don't have much skin in the game tomorrow. Zach, you Spurs have 12, right? Is it 11 or 12?
Yes, sir.
You guys were 12 last year too, right? Or were you 11 last year? I think you were like 12.
I don't know, man. I was in a good place being in the lottery for the first time last year. We'll see how tomorrow goes. So I think Vassell was 12, though. I think we're in the same spot.
Yeah, it was. I still – that was a good pick. So before we dive into really like the lottery and more specifically the top 10, obviously the trade season brings along a lot of – as Zach, as you said before we hopped on, like the season of disinformation. I think that's the best way to describe it. There, you could probably, whether you're on Google or Twitter – search any NBA player's name and find some type of rumor right now about them, simply because trade season correlates with the draft season and the interlude into free agency. So we had our first pretty significant move between the Pelicans and the Grizzlies in terms of just player personnel moving. It was Eric Bledsoe going to Memphis, Jonas Valanciunas, one of Zach's European darlings, going to New Orleans. Obviously, some picks involved. New Orleans very strategically clearing up some cap. Looks like they'll be going after either a free agent guard, I would assume, or potentially making a bigger splash in the trade market. So, Steph, I'll start with you. Overall thoughts on the trade, if there was a winner, and
what you think kind of the bigger picture of this trade is.
So I think the winner is the Pelicans. Okay. I don't think it's as terrible as a trade for the Grizzlies that a lot of people first made it out to be, because they are taking on a lot of salary. So like Jonas has 1 year left at $14 million. Eric Bledsoe has 2 years at $37.5 million left. And Steven Adams has 2 years, $35 million left. So essentially, the Pelicans opened up between $15 and $20 million worth of cap space, and you know more for that second year, and arguably got the best player in this draft. They also gave up a future first round pick, and they also traded down from 10 to 17. So why the Pelicans did this? To open up cap space, number one, and I think to potentially maybe try and trade for Damian Lillard. I think they're the sneaky team to maybe watch out for. It's a long shot, but they do have assets to potentially get it done. But if it's not Damian Lillard, right, they now have they don't run the risk of hemorrhaging their future, especially in that second year of those Bledsoe, the last year of those Bledsoe and Adams contracts that's coming up in 2 years. If they want to match whatever contract Lonzo Ball gets, or if they want to bring in Kyle Lowry or someone else. So I mean, that is the reason why the Pelicans did this. Why did the Grizzlies do this? Why did the Grizzlies want Steven Adams or Eric Bledsoe? I don't think they care about Eric Bledsoe or Steven Adams. I think they care about moving up from 17 to 10 and to pick up another first-round pick. The big key about this trade, and I tweeted this out, I was like, think less about the players in this draft. I think more about the cap space, the salary relief, and the picks in this – not this draft, in this trade. And, you know, every report – we'll talk about the draft. We'll talk about the draft kind of later on, but – every report kind of we see now is that the Grizzlies really want Josh Giddey, and that's who they're targeting at 10. And there's a chance he doesn't make it there because he's kind of now the hyped up player, right, in that lottery. He's kind of went from like 14-ish late lottery to now he's like minus 200 to be a top 10 pick. I'm going to pat myself on the back. I got him at minus like 120 to be under 11.5. So I'm feeling pretty good about that one. Thank you, BetMGM, the People's Sportsbook, for leaving that one up. But yeah, I mean, the Grizzlies, I think, are looking to target him and essentially just get another ball handler to help Ja. And if that ends up being Eric Bledsoe for 2 years, so be it. You know, Joe, I know you're not the biggest Eric Bledsoe fan, but there's like, he's not like useless, right? The contract is bad.
Yeah, I will give you that.
And so I don't hate it as much for the Grizzlies that a lot of people do. I do think it's a little bit of a head scratcher, right? I think it's like somewhere in between that where it's like, okay, this is kind of strange. But if you think about, okay, they moved up 7 spots to potentially get the guy they really wanted in this draft and pick up another pick. And it's not like this team is going to win a championship in a year or two, right? They're not there yet. So I don't hate it for the Grizzlies.
Fair. Zach, what about you?
Yeah, I don't have too much to add. I thought Steph broke it down really well. To be honest, man, that was the first time I had heard or thought about the prospect of Damian Lillard being in a trade with the Pelicans. I kind of love that on the surface without like digging in, you know, more, because obviously they've got a ton of those Lakers picks, right, from the Anthony Davis trade, and plenty of other assets to, you know, young assets that they could move. That's really interesting. And then on the Memphis side,
sorry to cut you off. I'm going to say they have enough to get it done. I think. Like,
I agree.
It really depends if Dame wants to go there. But like, just to kind of just finish off that Dame point, like they have enough without trading time, obviously.
I agree. I think the priority for Portland is going to be getting Dame to the Eastern Conference.
I agree.
If they can. 100%. But if a team like the Pelicans is the team that puts together the best package, or heaven forbid, the freaking Warriors, then they're going to, you know, I think that they're going to just take whatever, you know, the best package is, and the tiebreaker would be sending him East. For the Grizzlies, I've heard a couple whispers that you know, whispers. I'm listening to podcasts. I'm watching YouTube. But, you know, like I don't have any NBA connections. But I've heard that they may be looking to move up even further from 10. And maybe, you know, the Grizzlies are one of the deepest teams in the league. Like we know from our, you know, DFS action during the regular season that rostering Memphis is tough because they have 12 guys that are legit NBA rotation players. So maybe they can get a package and maybe move up to one of those Orlando picks or something like that. I thought the trade was fine, and I think it just it signals that there's going to be more movement for both of those teams.
Yep.
And I hope that this draft as a whole has a ton of trades and a lot of action, because that just makes it more fun and
I think entertaining. Yeah. I do. This has the feeling of what it does.
I try to refrain from like leaning into that. I feel like every year I get sucked in, like, this is going to happen and that's going to happen. Right. There's going to be this domino, you know, dominoes falling in all kinds of trades and moves. And
yeah,
sometimes it just is quiet. But
I do feel like outside, like you look at the top five outside of like Scotty Barnes, I feel like there people have a read on how this draft will go, but I really feel like it can go so many different ways compared to drafts of the past. Like, I think the top five, in my opinion, I don't want to say like locked up and cemented, it's pretty locked up and cemented. Like, I mean, I guess we can get into it now. Like, I have not believed a single report that I've seen saying that the Pistons don't know what they're doing. Like, there is absolutely no way the Pistons are passing on Cade Cunningham. If they do, clear out the front office. Like, there's absolutely no way they do this. Cade Cunningham, you know, 6'8" combo guard. It's easy to say because he's the consensus number one that he's the most NBA ready player, because he is. He's the best player in the draft. But I mean, he's a big dude. Like, he's going to be a matchup nightmare off the bat in the NBA. So I like the assumption that obviously Detroit's – I'm going to say I like the pick because Detroit's not going anywhere else.
Joe, thanks for that hot take.
No problem. Like number one, Cade Cunningham out of Oklahoma State to the Detroit Pistons. Heard it on the FTN NBA podcast first.
can I hop in really quickly, though? Because I think this is a really important betting point. We're talking about how the top five, like, I agree. I think this is like a rare draft, and the top five is pretty kind of set in stone. And this draft starts at six. But so Cade Cunningham, last I checked, was like between -6,000 and -8,000 to go first.
Yeah. Yep.
And the only risk of Cade Cunningham not going first is Jalen Green. And if Cade Cunningham goes first, Jalen Green is going second to the Rockets. That's like confirmed. He was actually seen on the Rockets owner's private jet the other day. Now, Jalen Green was last time I checked, was like -400 to be the second overall pick, right? So the math doesn't add up between those odds. Like, if Cade Cunningham's -8,000, Jalen Green should not be -400. And you see -400, you're like, oh, I'm not betting that. That's actually a good value in this case. I put a unit on Jalen Green at -360, which it's to win one unit. So I risked 3.6 units to win one unit. Just because I think that's a free unit. I didn't feel like putting more on it because you are paying a lot of juice. But like, the math doesn't add up, right? If Cade is going first, Jalen Green's going second.
You think he'd be at least like -1,000 or something, yeah.
Or even like -800, -700. So yeah. I actually viewed that, like, if you can still get Jalen Green under like -500, I still, to be the second overall pick, I still think that's good value.
It's a free unit, like you said.
Yeah.
But I think so. I mean, as we move into the top 10, top five, like, I think the consensus was probably Cade Cunningham 1, Jalen Green 2, Evan Mobley 3, Jalen Suggs 4, and Scotty Barnes 5. That's I assume what the consensus is. Zach, I'll kick it to you. These top five, I don't think we need to talk about Cade Cunningham, because I think he's like the sure thing. But I'd say picks 2 through 5, who are you most excited about as a potential fit on who we're expecting each of these teams to draft?
Yeah, it's pretty clearly Evan Mobley for me.
Yep.
I actually think the Rockets should take him. I think in their situation, you don't need to worry about, oh, we just signed Christian Wood. Like, okay, who cares? Like, you can get Evan Mobley, who could be a generational big man. Like, he's closely, like, a lot of people are comparing him to Anthony Davis, and I think that's maybe a bridge too far, but like, when you compare him to other quote-unquote top bigs in the last 10, 15 years, he's kind of in that Anthony Davis range in terms of his statistical output. So, obviously, as a 19-year-old, I think when the draft happens tomorrow, 7-foot guy who can
shoot 30% from three his first year in college,
can put it on the deck. Like,
He can switch defensively, too.
That's what I was going to say. I think that was my biggest thing when looking at Evan Mobley, is like, for his size, again, he's 7 feet. He has like a 7'5" wingspan or something. He's a very long individual, but he's not like flat footed defensively. Like, he can switch very quickly on defense. And that's something a lot of, like, think about the the high-end bigs that came out of recent drafts, like obviously recency bias for the playoffs, but DeAndre Ayton is one of the first ones that comes to mind. He has made strides defensively, but he's a flat-footed big who struggles in the pick and roll. Rudy Gobert, arguably one of the greatest defenders in the last 20 years in the NBA, you can pick him apart in the pick and roll. This isn't me saying Evan Mobley is going to be, you know, a perennial defensive player of the year, but I just think for someone so young to have that specific skill is something that you don't see a lot of NBA centers having, especially 19-year-old ones have. So I think that will allow him to focus on areas of development that will almost come easier as he grows. And I think it will kind of accelerate his development more so than other bigs in the NBA.
It's just the versatility on both ends, right? Like, he's special on both ends, and you don't see that out of bigs these days. Like, I just think he can be a franchise player, and there's obviously not a ton of those in this draft, in any draft in general, on average. And I just think, like, the only possible weakness that I see for him right now is, like, his physical frame. Like, you know, he's not coming in next year, and he's going to get punished by Joel Embiid when they go up against
each
other. Nikola Jokic is going to run circles around him. But, like, I think he gives those guys issues on the other end too. And the he'll fill out at, you know, the kid's a teenager still. I love Mobley, man. And I'm a Jalen Green fan, but Mobley is, like, if there was going to be somebody that Detroit took, I think it would be Evan Mobley over Cade Cunningham, right? Like, that would be my pick if they were going to go away from Cade for whatever reason. I don't think they should, but Mobley is the 1B for me in this draft.
Yeah, that makes sense. So the other, popular name in the top five is Jalen Suggs from Gonzaga. Obviously had a very, very strong tournament. Raptors just makes sense simply given the fact that people are expecting them to move on from Kyle Lowry. He would fit in pretty seamlessly. I don't think anyone's really expecting someone like Malachi Flynn to take this team and run the offense. Do you guys have – I mean – I think Jalen Suggs is a fine prospect for Toronto. I'm not, like, overly excited about his NBA prospects, but I think he in the NBA, like, he feels like one of the more mature players in this draft. I think he will be able to lead a team as a rookie a little better than some of these guys will, which I think, I mean, we could see a whole new Raptors team next year. So I think that is going to be of more value to a team like Toronto, given their potential offseason, than anyone else. Steph, do you have any, like, big hot takes on Jalen Suggs or what your expectations for him are?
No, I mean, honestly, I think, like, outside of Cade Cunningham, if you were to guess one player who's not going to, like, bust in this draft, it would probably be Jalen Suggs. I mean, that dude is an NBA body. He is a good defender. Like, he's already a good NBA defender. He has the ceiling to be an all-NBA, all-star caliber player. So I'm actually a big fan on Jalen Suggs. I actually think maybe I'm a little higher on him than you were, Joe, just because, like, I think, like, his floor is so high. And especially, like, you know, you have the top three, right? He probably doesn't have the ceiling as of those top three guys. But, like, it's a comparable ceiling, right? He still has a ceiling. And he's very unlikely going to be a bad player in the NBA. And at worst, he is a role player on a very good team. So I'm pretty high on Jalen Suggs. The biggest threat to this draft not going in the order, the top five, I should say, going in the order that everyone expects. That's Cade, Green, Mobley, Suggs, and Scottie Barnes. Is that every single team appears to love Scottie Barnes because he's got, like, the best attitude, apparently. And he can guard multiple positions. He has an NBA body that you know, can develop. He is an elite defender already. I think that's actually the quote from scouts, was like, he's an elite defender who can also kind of create his own shot or create a shot for others. And so teams love Scottie Barnes, and he's been the hottest name that's flown up the draft boards. I think his ceiling is five. I don't think the Raptors are going to take him at four, but I do think the biggest risk to Jalen Suggs being taken at four is definitely Scottie Barnes. I think the Magic would end up taking Jalen Suggs at five and be pretty happy about it. That Jalen Suggs tournament tape, especially in that game against UCLA, is just electric. You know, you saw, I don't know if you guys remember that block he had before the half-court game, where that block he had was just, like, exceptional, right? Not many people can do that at his size. And it kind of gave you LeBron vibes in that game seven against the Warriors, where, you know, it's just an incredible defensive play, and then made, like, an unbelievable pass to lead to a transition bucket. So I'm very, very high on Jalen Suggs. And I want to kind of touch on the point that Zach made between Evan Mobley and Jalen Green, where it's not really like a disagreement, but I think Jalen Green going ahead of Evan Mobley is justified. It's more of a risk. I'm completely with you there. I think Evan Mobley is the safer of the two picks. But Jalen Green is also just like an electric athlete who can shoot. And the way the NBA is currently built right now, I think if both of them become all NBA players, the path to a championship usually goes towards the guard rather than the big man. And that's just the way the NBA works right now. So I don't mind Jalen Green kind of hopping above Evan Mobley. I do think he is the biggest risk to flop or to be a bust in this draft. And the Rockets, quite frankly, don't really they can't really afford to miss on this pick. But I don't think he's going to flop. I think he's too good of an athlete who can create his own shot and can shoot from deep.
I mean, you kind of articulated my thoughts on Jalen Green perfectly. Like, I think the bust risk is there, but you mentioned his success in the G League. Like, 18 points, 4 boards, 3 assists on 46, 37, 83 as an 18-year-old. And, like some people scoff at the G League. Like,
at worst, it's
the third best league in the world behind the EuroLeague.
Correct.
Correct. To go in there against those guys and put up those kind of numbers, like, I think defensively is probably his biggest weakness, just kind of playing defense as a whole. Watching some tape on Green, like, he's a little bit aloof off the ball on
fair,
defense.
That's fair.
Like, you can't deny the upside that he's a player, and especially on offense, he's already showing it.
The complex, you know, Jalen Green kind of reminds me, like, not the actual player, but like kind of the athleticism and like how it worked out in the draft, right? Is Russell Westbrook. So it's like, I think people see Jalen Green and they think Russell Westbrook athleticism with the potential to shoot. Because I'm pretty sure like Westbrook was one of the highest risers. I mean, this is a long time ago, so I don't completely remember, but like he was like supposed to go like 8-10, I think, and then ended up going in the top 5 because people were like, oh, this dude is unreal athletically. And Jalen Green has a little bit of that, but is a scorer. And I'm not saying he's going to be a Russell Westbrook type player. I'm just kind of talking about like that sort of frame, right, and that athleticism. There are some comps there.
So, yeah, but
I love it.
I just wanted to touch on Scotty Barnes since you guys were talking about him a little bit. I do think that the top 5 goes unless we. I think the Cavs are kind of live to trade back. Mm-hmm. I think it could be. It could. I think the Thunder are going to do something big. Like Presti has to use these picks at some point, and I think he's going to make some sort of big swing tomorrow, or I guess tonight when most people will be listening to this, hopefully, but. With Scotty Barnes, like, nothing about the player. To me, it's the landing spot. Like, if I'm Scotty Barnes, I don't want to go to freaking Orlando, man.
No, you don't.
Like, they got a full roster. They almost got $100 million in salaries already committed next
They've
year.
They've got Jonathan Isaac coming back. Right.
Absolutely.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Does Florida Ryan? State alum make a difference? Correct.
Yeah. That's.
I mean,
I think it would make a difference if he played a different position.
for me, as
the exact same position.
If I'm Scotty Barnes, how, like, what example is there from the Orlando Magic franchise over the last 15 years of them developing a player?
Well, that's a problem. There is, I mean,
I'm I'll say not Jonathan say Isaac. I think if he didn't get hurt, I think Jonathan Isaac was on.
Sure, fine. But Isaac was not. He wasn't a project like Scotty is. Like, Scotty is a project on offense.
I think there is an angle you can take where you can say Markelle Fultz just because Philly like ruined him. But I don't think it's so much like Orlando, as it is Orlando's culture now. Like, John Hammond fell into kind of the same sense of NBA purgatory when he was in Milwaukee before John Horst took over. Like, they just he's a great individual, cares about the team. He just doesn't draft and develop talent well. Mm-hmm. It's just not his MO. So that I think that is a big hindrance for prospects going to Orlando or whatever team he's going to end up being the GM of at some other point in his career.
If I'm Scotty, I want to go at 4. I want to go to Toronto.
I would too. 100%.
Look at all the guys they've developed.
Yep.
Yeah.
I mean, they turned
OG into one of the better two-way players in the NBA now. And I mean, especially with Toronto, like I said, their potential offseason, not only would you potentially go to a team that can unlock a higher ceiling and really help you develop, there also might end up being a clear path to playing time in Toronto relative to Orlando if Pascal Siakam moves. I don't think they move OG whatsoever. Pascal moving is a very real possibility. I think it's almost a given that Kyle Lowry's not going to be there. Not that obviously Scotty Barnes would take Kyle Lowry's place, but there would be a lot of shuffling in the rotation that would open up room for him. Now, looking at, like, I'm not just going to say 6-10. I guess the rest of the lottery. Steph, you hit on Josh Giddey as a very, very hot commodity right now. Why don't we touch on – I'll kick it to you to touch on Josh Giddey. Why you think – obviously you touched on why you thought Memphis moved up to 10 to get him. I agree with you as to that's why they did it. I think if they move up, say, two more spots to Orlando, if they end up moving up again, I think that is to try and solidify Josh Giddey because of all the hype. There is a risk he goes before 10 now. And then after we talk about Josh Giddey a bit, I want to kick it to you, Zach, and talk about anyone else in this lottery that really stands out to you. So, Steph, why don't you kick us off with the hype around Josh Giddey?
Yeah, so, you know, Zach mentioned that the Grizzlies, there's rumors that they're going to try and trade up. That's because the Warriors and the Kings at 7 and 9 are potential suitors for Josh Giddey. I think they are trying to get him. I agree with that. I think that's who they want. He is, how do you describe him? He's a Australian point forward, but can not shoot Ben Simmons. A little bit and doesn't have the yips, right? That's essentially kind of what he is. I think he's more of a project than people are kind of making it out to be. But, you know, listen, a 6'8 point guard who is a triple-double threat, who's what, he's 18, right? He's 18, yeah.
He's really young.
And he can shoot a little bit. You know, that is an intriguing prospect. I think he's actually a great, great fit for the Grizzlies because he can literally be a secondary ball handler for Ja Morant, or he can be a floor spacer and kind of develop a little bit from someone who he's been comped to, Kyle Anderson. I think Kyle Anderson's still on the Grizzlies, right? Yeah.
Yeah.
I love the fit on Memphis. I do think there's a chance the Warriors grab him. And I know he worked out for the Kings, I think like 2 days ago. And the Kings kind of raved about his workout. And he's the guy, you know, we talk about, you know, you follow sports books and odds on players. That's how you really have a good idea of like where they're trending. Again, Josh Giddey was like at 15.5, 14.5. Then was plus money to be under 11.5. Then was like heavy juice to be minus up to be under 11.5. Now he's minus 200 to be under 10.5. And I think that's going to kind of drop to, I think that line might end at 9.5, where it will be slightly favored that he is going over, because people are going to expect the Grizzlies to stay at 10. But that seems like the landing spot. I think the Grizzlies want him, and the landing spots for him are 7, 9, and 10. If you want like more about the player, it's kind of hard because he hasn't really played against the best players, but he's a better prospect in my eyes than someone like Davion Mitchell, even though he had such a great tournament, right? And he's played against better people. But you kind of look at like at the measurables, right? 6'8", can guard multiple positions. Davion Mitchell's an undersized guard. You know, that's he's a great player. He doesn't project as well as Giddey in terms of a ceiling. Obviously, he's going to have to become a better defender. He's going to have to become a little more athletic and get stronger and fill into that body. But you can say that about like 80% of the potential athletes in this draft, right? They're all like 18 to 20 years old. They're all going to get stronger, especially when they're working out every day with NBA trainers. So I think the Josh Giddey hype is kind of justified. It's intriguing. Like, you know, he's a different sort of prospect, and I think that also intrigues players. The person I want to hear from Zach from, and I'm not sure if you actually know about him. I know you are the EuroLeague expert, but like I mocked Alperen Sengun pretty high just because he's an 18-year-old Turkish League MVP who's a double-double kind of machine, and he kind of has shades of Nikola Vucevic and that magic spot at number 8, right? I think that's a decent landing spot. His total is like 11.5 right now in sportsbook, so I'm a little higher than that at 8, but I was curious your take on that, Zach.
Yeah, this is great because this is how I was going to lead off. Whatever I was going to talk about is if this draft goes how you have it mocked, and I'm going to be upset because Alperen Sengun needs to go number 12 to the San Antonio Spurs.
Well, most people have a mock heart. There. Most people have a mock there, by the way. That's like the consensus pick for the Spurs.
Yeah. I don't think he gets there. All right, he's too good. Like I agree, undersized Nikola Vucevic. I also think undersized Nikola Jokic. Like, I'm not calling for this guy to be an MVP, but oh God, he's so, like, watching his like, he plays for Besiktas in Turkey, and that they were not in the EuroLeague this year, so I didn't get the pleasure of playing him in any DFS. But man, good. Like, if you haven't watched this kid, go look up some YouTube videos before the draft starts tonight, and just look, like, find somebody's draft breakdown on him, right? Breaking down some of his film. Like, this kid is ultra skilled, and so for me, that, like, I think any team who gets him is making a great move, and I really hope he falls to 12. While I'm on the Spurs, I'll do my 45 seconds here, and if I go too much over that, just go.
You're
ahead.
You're fine. And don't do your thing.
A couple weeks ago, I really thought they could get Josh Giddey. His stock seems to be just shooting up. So whoever his agent is, whoever he's got in his corner is doing some good work. If you look at his Aussie League stats, you know, where, like you said, LaMelo was at last year, like, the stats are kind of comparable, especially the peripherals. Like, you talked about his kind of shooting issues. I think that can be fixed if he goes to the right place. And again, you mentioned how young he was. So I love Josh Giddey would be Giddey. That's terrible. I would be extremely happy to get Josh Giddey at number 12. I mentioned Şengün. Franz Wagner, you have at number 9 to the Kings. Again, he's on my list of guys. And so if all three of those guys are not available, this is a reach according to a lot of people's mock drafts, including your stuff. But I think Usman Garuba is the pick there because I think the Spurs need a big here. Like, you've got Jakob Poeltl, but Jakob Poeltl can't stretch the floor one bit. And Şengün especially. But anybody who watched Franz Wagner, you know, they could have watched him at Alba Berlin a couple years ago, but now the last couple years at Memphis, Usman Garuba, playing in the EuroLeague for the last 2 years, but professionally the last three, 18-year-old, a little undersized, but I think has just as much upside as somebody like Franz Wagner. So again, now I'm here ranting about the Spurs. Anything I missed? Like, we didn't get a ton of talk about, like, James Bouknight or any of those guys that are. Well,
so I was actually going to ask you about Franz Wagner.
Sure.
I, you know, Steph, you read my mind when I read your mock this morning. Like, I just, like, it's weird how little I've heard about him this offseason. Like, he was one of the more talked about players during the tournament, obviously with the Mo Wagner connection. You know, the analysts love to draw those NBA comparisons, but I just, like, I still think he'll probably go within the top 10. I know you have him mocked to Sacramento. It makes sense, I think, especially if you're looking at his skill set, especially offensively, if they are expecting to move on from Buddy Hield, which I think is a high possibility. I do think his perimeter game can, it's not going to seamlessly just replace and replicate Buddy Hield, but I think it gives them something rather than nothing. But is he, I have a hard time seeing him as anything more than a significant role player in the NBA.
Yeah, I agree. I like Zach's call, by the way. I was, if we were going to, like, give out hot takes, I was going to actually kind of echo where I was going to say Usman Garuba is one of my favorite players in this draft, and I would rather draft him over Franz Wagner. But, like, the thing about Wagner is, like, he can shoot and he can guard multiple positions, and in the NBA, that's all you really need to do to have a future. So I don't mind him. I'm going to have an update on my mock tomorrow, and there's a good chance he might be someone who drops down to, like, 11 or 12, where I think he's the guy who's potentially slipping. You know, in terms of Bouknight and Kuminga, I think they're both going 6 or 7, right? I don't think one is falling past there. Most people are mocking Bouknight to the Thunder, and I understand why. To me, I just, like, the way I view this Thunder rebuild, and this is dependent on what they do, right? Because they're still trying to move up to one, and we can actually talk about that potential trade that's been hyped up. It's been hyped where it's like Shea and 6 for 1, but, like, to me, like, in terms of where the Thunder are with their rebuild, right? And they're almost like in the Bruno Caboclo rebuild, where they're 2 years away from being 2 years away. I don't think Bouknight fits that as well as Kuminga, where Kuminga is the rawer player with, I would say, probably a better ceiling. And, you know, if they're going to be competitive in 3 or 4 years, they're going to have to pay this pick a pretty hefty contract. once they're ready to compete. And I think Kuminga would end up being the cheaper player who will take a little longer to develop, but someone, you know, that fits their rebuild a little better. So I've mocked Kuminga at six, even though the majority of people have Book Knight at six. I think, you know, it's just like, you know, that's a really interesting spot if Book Knight goes seven to the Warriors, where it fits well. It's also it's also a really interesting spot to trade out of, where that pick now has a little added value, because I think Book Knight is viewed as the better prospect. So the draft for me really starts at six with Oklahoma City. And these two picks, I think Kuminga or Book Knight, I don't think either of them falls past seven, but I really don't have a real kind of like focus on where each one goes. And like I said, Book Knight right now is the consensus favorite to go six to the Thunder.
Yeah, I like that call. Zach, what about you?
Well, so I wanted to a little off topic here.
That's fine.
Right before we went on to record, Jonathan Wasserman, who is one of the draft guys at Bleacher Report, tweeted that he continues to hear Zaire Williams is a real possibility for the Magic at pick number eight.
Really?
And he says Orlando's decision there will have a big domino effect down the board, and I think that's an understatement if Zaire Williams goes
I think
eight.
That will – I mean, everything I've seen has Zaire Williams anywhere from, like, 16 to 20, mm-hmm. which I think 20 is a bit low. Mm-hmm. But I think that would change the entire
– What's funny is I mocked Zaire Williams 18 to the Thunder for mm-hmm. probably the same exact reasons why the Magic are – considering him, where he's someone who his trait is that he has one of the highest ceilings, and that's his trait
100%.
Yeah,
but like he's not going to help anyone right away.
Right.
So
he also shot horribly last season.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. Was he like 20%? It was like something. Really
it was something.
Bad.
It was
sub 30 for sure. Lot,
yeah, it was for a player
29.1.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's not. It's not great for.
The other guy who, and like this is why I don't understand that report, and I think it's kind of a lot of smoke, because I think first off, that's an easy name because of his ceiling and his athleticism to kind of get people hyped on. But you've got Trey Murphy, who's what, 6'8", and who shot 43% from three. Yes, he's a little older, but that's a guy who I actually think is going to go higher than people are mocking, just because he is a proven shooter who can guard multiple positions already and help a lot of teams that are like, there's a good amount of teams in that top 15 that are looking for players to be a part of their rotation right away. And Trey Murphy's kind of one of those plug and play players. I have him at 13 to the Patriots right now. His over under last time I checked was like 19.5, right? So I'm well under that. And like the reason why I bring him up is because of Zaire Williams, right? Like those are the two where, you know, Zaire Williams is usually mocked in that 13-ish range, and I have him falling, and I have Trey Murphy kind of going higher. Because you look at these teams, right? 12, 13, 14, 15, you have the Spurs, you have the Pacers. The Pacers are a team that want to win, they want to draft someone. The Warriors, if they hold their pick, Bob Myers flat out said, the people we draft, if we keep these picks at 7 and 14, we want them to be a part of this rotation. They need to be players playing. They're not going to be like sitting on them, right? The Wizards are a team that, you know, whether you agree or not, but if they keep Bradley Beal and Russell Westbrook, they're a team that is going to want to win now. And then you have the Thunder at 16, and that's I think a spot, potential landing spot for Zaire Williams, where they're going to draft for upside. But I didn't see that report. I don't buy it. I think that's smoke. That's kind of my take on it.
That's fair. I guess to round out the first round, I'll kick it to you, Zach. Is there anyone else in this, say, 15? I guess like I'll throw 12 in there just for you, but this 12 to 30 range that sticks out to you as someone that's being either overvalued or someone that on the opposite side is being completely undervalued right now?
Sure. I think
it's interesting Usman because is probably number one for me, but I see mocks with him at like one of those two Houston picks. I think they back to back. Was it 24, 25? 23, 24.
Houston's 23, 24, yeah.
Yeah, I see him mocked at 23 or 24 to Houston. I don't think he'll slip that far.
Yeah, and if he does, that would be a huge win for them to get Jalen Green and Usman Garuba.
Yeah.
I'm just kind of interested in some of the like older guys, like a Davion Mitchell. Like, I think if he falls to 14, okay, I think that's the perfect, like, I don't say solution, but the perfect pick for the Golden State Warriors if they keep 7 and 14. You know, to get a guy like that who can come in. You know, I think plenty of people are worried about the fact that we really only have 1 year of a sample size of Davion Mitchell being that elite player in college. And, you know, how much of that was like, obviously guys can get better, but Baylor was freaking good. Like, he had all kinds of talent around him. Like, how much did that kind of bolster his output? You know, you look even further down, we mentioned Zaire, you know, Cameron Thomas is, you know, for lack of a better term, a bucket. And I think he could really help. He could really help.
He's a Hooper, Zach. Please get it right.
Jesus Christ.
That's 15 and below, right? These teams that were just in the playoffs and most of those teams don't have, you know, intentions of being in the lottery next year. Guys like Chris Duarte, right? A little bit older. Like, I think he's the same age as Devin Booker. Just to kind of push. Yeah. So, like, but if he goes to a team like the Hawks, right? If the Knicks keep 19 and 21, one of those picks could be Duarte. We talked about Davion Mitchell, Jared Butler, right? From that same Baylor team is a really talented guy. And then I think sneakily, Sharif Cooper, right? Out of Auburn, I think he has a lot of upside. And could be a steal for one of those teams, you know, late teens, early 20s. And I guess just kind of round it out. Kai Jones, a little bit more familiar with him, 2 years at Texas down here in my neck of the woods. I kind of think he's like an all or nothing guy. Like, Texas doesn't have a great track record recently with their bigs. Like, I mean, you've got Jared Allen on one hand, who I think is an above average big in the league right now. But then you're looking at Jackson Hayes. You're looking at Mo Bamba out there in Orlando. We talked about them developing players or the lack thereof.
What about LaMarcus Aldridge?
Yeah, I mean, but that I feel like that's a different era. That's a different era.
Can we touch on that on Kai Jones for a second? There's actually two things.
Sure.
The first one, this will be the quicker one. Is there a better fit in this draft than Jared Butler going 22nd to the Los Angeles Lakers? Like, that is just like an obvious fit.
I feel like
if he falls there, but like it's an obvious fit. If the Lakers also keep that pick, there's a chance they trade that pick. But so I mocked Kai Jones to the Pelicans prior to Jackson Hayes getting arrested today. Jackson Hayes getting arrested today,
that,
I think, makes it like a really good chance that Kai Jones goes 17 to the Pelicans, because like I don't think Jackson Hayes like stays on the team, or if he does, like he might actually be in like serious trouble. It's not a good time to get arrested either if you're a young big or a young player in the NBA.
He's also still, draft, what, 20 years old, 21?
I mean, he gets paid – if he is to sign a new contract, what, in a year – in 2 years, right? So this would be his third year. So in 2 years, essentially, he'll be a free agent. You know, they're probably not going to pay him. This, to me, seems like a spot to potentially take a big where, you know, we don't expect Jonas to be, you know, the Pelicans' future center. They'll probably have him this year. But I like the landing spot at 17 for Kai Jones.
Steph, I hadn't scrolled down this far yet. You think the Nets get Sharif Cooper, my guy? That would not make me very happy. As somebody,
I mean, that's a great fit. That's exactly what they need.
Dinwiddie's not coming back.
He's not coming back. And like, 100%. It'd be nice to not have. I mean, they have Mike James, who's a future Hall of Famer. We all love Mike James, but like, they need a playmaker that's not James Harden, Kevin Durant, or Kyrie Irving. Yeah. That was really especially if they're going to be this injury prone. Sharif Cooper is a really good fit. There was no bias into that pick. I think Sharif Cooper didn't, you know, mistakenly fall right to 27 in a perfect landing spot. But I think the reason why I almost put him at 26 to the Nuggets. But Isaiah Todd's, I think, one of the interesting prospects in this draft, where no one's really mocking him in the first round. He's been mocking, I should say, all over the place. His over under in this draft is like 37.5 last I checked. I have him at 26 to the Nuggets just because he was one of the highest, biggest high school recruits, right, coming out. And then he was awful in the G League. Like, unlike Jalen Green, Isaiah Todd, it backfired for him. And, you know, I do think a team is going to take a chance on his upside, because there is, like, you know, for the most part, there's talent there. And the Nuggets are a team that seem to be open to taking those risks. So that's another kind of bet that I recommend. I took Isaiah Todd under 37.5 because I think a team is going to bite on his ceiling.
I'll tell you this. If I've gotten to talk about my team, we touched a little bit on Brooklyn there. If Isaiah Todd is there at 31, Joe.
I don't think he will be. So I'll be honest. I haven't get your hopes really. Up. That's the problem. I haven't really he might be there and then just get disappointed.
Who do you think? Who's a player or two that you think or that you kind of have your eye on?
Can I
Quentin Grimes is one that I. What'd you say?
Can I actually take this show before you answer it?
Go for it.
So I wanted to touch on the Bucks because I obviously don't have a first round pick, but someone who I'm really high on for the Milwaukee Bucks. He's a little older, but I really like Samuel Watson going to the Bucks at 31. I'm not sure if you guys are familiar with him, but he is the inventor of the stopwatch. And someone on the Bucks needs to learn how to make sure Giannis is staying under 10 seconds on the line because that's really going to potentially
I don't know
affect
what,
him down the line.
It looks like they met with him before game six because whatever Giannis was doing at the line worked out.
He's a proxy.
You timed that perfectly. I forgot that you had that queued up.
So he's approximately
300. I knew there was a joke queued up. I've been like waiting for the whole time.
But go ahead, Joe. Sorry.
Yeah, on a serious note, one name I've seen a lot is Quentin Grimes. I think he would again, obviously Bryn Forbes opted out of his player option a couple of days ago. I think Quentin Grimes would, I think he's a junior. I think he has enough experience and enough of a shooting repertoire where he would be able to come in and knock down shots off the bench. The thing is, the Bucks don't need a ton. So I think someone, again, like a Quentin Grimes would be ideal. I wouldn't mind. I don't think Trey Mann is going to drop. I think he'll be a first-round pick, but I think Trey Mann has potential if we're looking for another backup point guard, I guess. I'm not going to consider Dante a backup point guard. He's just an ancillary ball handler. So Trey Mann and Quentin Grimes are the two I'm looking at more. I'm trying not to include this with recency bias at the Olympics from last night, but I just I expect Bobby Portis to walk. I would like them to bring PJ Tucker back, but if they don't bring back either of them, I do think they'll go after someone. I was talking to Zach and before you hopped on, Steph, someone like a Doug McDermott fits well with the. I think there are more options in free agency in the front court, and I think they have more players to develop in the front court. Someone like a Jordan Nwora than they do in the back court. Where I would like to see them take a guard.
I haven't put it to pen and paper. For the Bucks at 31. One is Jason Preston. He was at a mid-major school who played really well, who a lot of people really like, who could shoot. It's one of those players who shot well from three but couldn't hit free throws. But that's always a little concerning for me. I kind of view that as one of those trades.
I also saw
The other guy, Joe, this is queuing up for Zach, and I wanted to lay this up on the tee for him.
Okay. Okay.
Brokaš Jokubaitis.
Yes! I was about to go there. I'm literally looking at my notes on Rokas here. So I appreciate that, Steph. Rokas Jokubaitis from Žalgiris in the Lithuanian League, also played in the Euro League this past year. Young kid, 20 years old, coming into the draft. Kind of just like a good pick and roll player, really soft touch from three. He was 39%. In the EuroLeague this year, just kind of projects long term as he's a good offensive player, kind of at all three levels. Has a nice pull up game, catch and shoot, good finisher at the rim. He's a strong finisher. He's aggressive. I kind of think he's gonna end up. I hope for him that he's gonna end up like a better Nando DeColo. Nando DeColo obviously kind of washed out of the league after a few years, obviously with the Spurs, and got traded to the Raptors. Yeah. But he's been a first team EuroLeague guy the last couple of years, so that again, my Euro bias is obviously showing through at this point of the pod more than it has already. But I think he's going to be a nice pickup for somebody in the second round tomorrow or tonight. Yeah.
I don't disagree. The other guy that I wouldn't mind dropping from Illinois is Iota Sunmu.
Yep.
He's not necessarily like, I don't think he's a phenomenal athlete, but he's a really, really good ball handler, and he's a pesky defender from what I've seen. And like that, I think he's a player that both addresses a need for the Bucks, and I also think he fits the Bucks culture. So I think naturally he just makes sense. I still think there's a high potential he gets drafted in the first round. Before we move on to, I don't want to say some of the more exciting stuff, but people love potential trades on draft day. So we'll talk about that in a second. One player that I do want to talk about is Luka Garza. A lot of mocks have him going completely undrafted. You know, Jills wrote an article on FTM Bets. Stefano, you were all over it as well. I don't see any way he goes undrafted.
I mean, like,
I shouldn't say I don't see any way. I shouldn't say I don't see any way. I think the betting value is on him getting drafted. What is it? Under 55?
Yeah, it's under 55 and a half. Yeah, it was about like even money on both sides. Not even money. It was like minus 110 on both sides. Maybe like minus 120. I forgot. But like my thing on Luka Garza, right? Does he have slow feet and is he an atrocious defender? Yes.
Yes.
Should he be a first round pick? Probably not. But like, how many people in this draft are more skilled offensively than him?
That's right? Especially the low post. Like he's a very, very dominant low post
signer. There's a role for him in the NBA, and like to get drafted in the NBA, you essentially need to be good at one thing, and he's good at getting buckets, and that's a very important thing. So I fully expect him to get drafted. I think he'll probably get drafted somewhere in the 40s. Right, I'm pulling up actually the second round order right now to find like a
good so for spot. I have it in front of me. So I mean, Brooklyn at 44.
I would actually like that spot. I think that's really interesting because I'm of the the Nets aren't great defensively, but they don't need to really add like defensive players. I'd be fine bringing in Luka Garza to play 7 minutes a game.
Based on what we said earlier about New Orleans, like New Orleans also has 43. Like I know one player they're looking at a second round. I've seen a lot is Moses Wright. Like
the thing about the Nets probably aren't going to keep those picks just for cap reasons. They'll probably use that money to pick up.
Oh, they have 49 too. Okay.
Yeah. I think the Hawks at 48 is an interesting spot for Luka Garza too.
I don't see the Hawks. I just think they found something in Onyeka Okongwu. Where if they're going to – I can't remember how many years Capella has left on his contract, but he's there next year. Obviously, Collins is a restricted free agent, I believe.
There's the mock I'm looking at right now actually has Luka at 51 to the Pelicans. And again, like we're talking about like players' numbers, right? His numbers are – his offensive numbers are really good.
They're off the charts.
24 points a game, 44% from three. He's 6'10", 240. So like – does he need to be a good defender? No, he can foul someone six times in his 10 minutes. And, like, is he slow? Yeah. Is he out of shape? Probably. But he doesn't need to play 30 minutes a game, right? He's also probably not out of shape because he played
pretty he also, like, I know obviously we don't want to, like, hammer home just awards all the time, but, like, he won the Wooden Award for a reason. Like, he was the best, arguably the best offensive player in the country. So there is value there.
There's bigger stiffs than Luka Garza that play in the league right now. He has a spot in the league.
100%. And the thing is, if he – I do see him getting drafted. If he doesn't, he will find his way onto a summer league roster, and he will be on a team opening day.
Or he will just dominate the Euro League. Just absolutely dominate.
Shred. Absolutely shred the Euro League. So looking at – obviously, you know, we alluded to it prior. It is the season of disinformation. We've seen rumors swirling these last 7 to 14 days. Most popular names, just the usuals, really. Now Ben Simmons, Kyle Kuzma, Kyle Lowry, Lonzo Ball. One of the surprising ones that I didn't necessarily think was going to pop up was SGA. He's not necessarily being actively shopped, but he's available. So I do think the best bet at them moving him is if Detroit ends up conceding and takes him six and maybe another future pick for one. I don't think they do. I don't think there's any way they move off of one. But is there a scenario where you see SGA getting traded tomorrow? Or today, whenever you're on draft day.
Can I say something that I think Zach is going to disagree with? Because I'm ready for this reaction.
But embrace debate. Go.
But, like, if I'm the Pistons, there's absolutely no shot in hell I'm trading one for Shea and six. As good of a player as Shea is, like, I think Shea has an upside. I don't think he has number one player on a championship winning team upside. And I think Cunningham can potentially have that. So there's no way in hell I would trade one. You're trading Cade for Shea and one of Book Knight or Kuminga. And if I'm the Pistons, I do not do that.
I don't disagree with that take, but I think the package would be more than that if they're seriously talking about it. And the Thunder have the pieces to get it done. It's just how much do the Pistons ask for it? Like, I would take Shea 6-16 and any 2023 picks that the Thunder have, the double draft. Like, I'll take all of those and I'll give up Cade Cunningham.
What do you think Cade's like trajectory is in the NBA? Like, do you think he's going to become that all NBA player?
I think Cade is one of the most NBA ready players we've seen in a very long time. Like, I think there is obviously Zion.
Because that's the question you're asking too. Like,
I kind of put Cade right behind Zion.
But like, I mean, obviously we're not saying Cade is at LeBron's level, right? But that number one pick has a significant value, right? Where, like, let's just use LeBron as a bad example. But there's no amount of picks the Cavs could have taken where that trade would have been good. Like, they could have traded 10 years worth of drafts to basically bring in LeBron. And that trade would have been bad for the Cavs, right? So, like, do you take that risk? If Cade Cunningham becomes a future Hall of Famer and you had the first overall pick and you traded it down, you know, that's tough to kind of survive.
That's tough. But, again, it depends on what picks you're getting from the Thunder, because they have such a smorgasbord. Like, they've got this little charcuterie board of draft picks out there, and they're letting you have to let Detroit come in and take this little 2021, this 2023, this 2024 from the Clippers, from the Celtics, whoever, like, and just figure out, like, try to play the odds there and say, you know, I don't think Kawhi and Paul George are going to be with the Clippers in 3 years. So let me get that Clippers pick, which could be a top five, no protections, anything like that. I don't think that deal is out there. To your point, I just don't think that the Pistons, like, we're just going to take Cade. It's going to draw our fans in for at least 2 years, right? And put him next to Killian Hayes.
The thing is, if I'm the Thunder, I do exactly what you say. And it's like the exact opposite. It's like, I go to the Pistons, I say, we have 8 billion picks. Mm-hmm. Take what you want for one, and we'll get this deal done. You're right. They have the if the Pistons are interested in something like that, the Thunder absolutely have enough to do it. I don't know if they are.
My concern with the Thunder right now is I think the longer they sit on these picks, I'm not. It's hard to say they're overvaluing the picks. I think they are. To your point, I don't think I'm not doubting their front office abilities, but I just don't think they're as open to just piling a shit ton of them together as they should be. Like,
what they should do is what, they sorry,
34. Sorry. They have like 34, whatever, over the next how many years? Like, the odds of all those panning out is very, 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 very slim.
You can't use them all.
No, you can't. You literally, like, if you hypothetically use them all, you are going to be running, like, your turnover is going to be that of like a 4 year university.
You need a second G League team.
Yep, correct. It just doesn't make sense.
If I'm the Thunder, I think an obvious trade up spot, assuming that the Warriors aren't trading for Damian Lillard, is you go, hey, Bob Myers, what about Lou Dort? Was it Lou Dort 16 and 18 for 7, and see what happens.
Yeah,
I don't want to give up Dort. I love.
I don't want. I was. Like, I love is, Lou Dort has Lou a Dort ton of value though.
But yeah, he's going to get paid soon though. That's the thing. He's going to get paid very soon, and he's not a part of that rebuild.
You don't think Lou Dort? You don't think they want him there? I think he's he's one of the pieces.
He's not. They're not going to be good enough, quick enough. Like, they're not going to pay Lou Dort $20 million a year.
You got to get to the salary floor. Who are you going to pay?
I mean, they have like 30. Not Moses Brown. Pay, but like, I mean, I think that's fair. I would pay Dort too, but like, the Thunder in this sort of rebuild, right? Where, like, what is more valuable to them? Moving up 10 spots in a draft or keeping Lou Dort for 4 years, right? And I think it's
think it's moving up?
Lou Dort has extreme value in this specific draft, in my opinion, because you have teams like the Golden State Warriors picking in the top 10 who are a win-now team, who they will value someone like Lou Dort more than a team like the Orlando Magic, right? Or, I mean, the Sacramento Kings are a potential good landing spot, but like, I would look to package one of those or both of those picks and a player to move into the top 10, or you just kind of move. Like, they should not draft three people in the first round. on Thursday. That's kind of my take on the Thunder. Like, I think we're all on the same page here. Like, they should.
It doesn't work. Like, I don't think a rebuild works.
Well, that's what the Celtics did. The Celtics screwed it up. Like, you don't want to make that.
The same Celtics mistake. Screwed it up. The Celtics still drafted very good players, but it just shows that like it's not enough in today's NBA. A couple other players that names have been hot. Kyle Kuzma, his name has been floating around for years at this point. It seems like his value is pretty low right now, which I can't necessarily blame teams. We haven't really seen progression from him in, 3 years? The rumored trade right now, we talked about it a little bit, and I don't know how much steam it has, is Kuzma and the Lakers 22 for Joe Ingles and 30 from Utah. I don't see any way Utah does that. I think Utah would be handing the Lakers a very valuable championship piece in Joe Ingles. I think that would just be an absolute no-brainer for the Lakers. So I'm personally ruling that trade out. I don't think that happens. But in terms of Kyle Kuzma, do you think he is on the Lakers after the draft? If not, I think he will be. But if not, what do you think is like a realistic destination for him? Because it seems like it's almost hard to find a fit for him right now.
Shanghai.
In the NBA. I mean, you might have just had the best answer. But
I think he's on the Lakers next year, because I don't think there's a single GM, with the possible exception of the Sacramento Kings, because they're dunces. Yeah. They like I saw some framework for a trade that involved getting Buddy Hield to the Lakers, and I think that's about the ceiling of what the Lakers can do. And I think that would be great for them. I'm really hoping that the Kings don't open up an avenue for the Lakers to get better, because I think the rest of the league is kind of in lockstep on that. Like, yeah, don't let them out of this dumb shit that they did with extending Kyle Kuzma. And like, some of that was kind of required because they were already a little bit hamstrung after the Anthony Davis trade. But
yeah,
I don't see, like, what team wants Kyle Kuzma? He's not the worst player of all time, but like, he's not worth the contract.
It's not even just what team wants Kyle Kuzma. It's like, realistically, what team does he make better?
I was gonna say the trade that I think could happen would be the Lakers send 22 and Kuzma to like a team like the Thunder, just to get him off.
Just to get him something. Yeah, and the Thunder have. There's but no doubt.
The Thunder, like the Rockets. The Rockets are another. Right, the Rockets are another team. Like, it just like. That's the path for Kyle Kuzma if he gets moved. I don't think he's going
to
get dealt
though. He has to go to a team that's already performing at their floor, because there's nothing to risk in taking on someone like Kuzma. I agree.
On the flip side of that, like that trade scenario though, the Jazz are the team that we like are going to make a move. They basically already said they don't want to pay the luxury tax. They want to lower their luxury tax bill. So that means Joe Ingles or Derek Favors or both are getting traded, and likely that 30th pick. But again, they're not doing that for Kyle Kuzma. Like, that's not what it is.
That just makes no sense for them at all.
They, also, they would make the Lakers that much better, and why would you do that when you're competing at the top of the West?
Yeah.
Like, exactly. Quick trivia question that's really off topic, but I was just clicking through the Magic page I had up here on my other tab. How many players were on the roster for the Magic last year?
Almost 27.
I was gonna say 24. Shit.
Bingo. 27. Good job, Ooh. Joe.
Can we count that?
Just getting back to the Jazz, like, to avoid the luxury tax, like, didn't they just get new owners? Like, are y'all really going to come in here and do that? Like, you have a slight window here. You were just the one seed. You can re-sign Mike Conley with bird rights, I believe. And just like run it back,
Favors, if you want to trade Derek Favors, like trade Derek Favors, but I wouldn't trade Joe Ingles.
I think Joe Ingles is a very valuable piece for a contender, and like Utah obviously fits that bill. It just doesn't make sense.
I have a random question for Zach, because I actually have never heard of this person. I was scrolling through late second round Europeans to see if I could stump Zach. I don't know if you've ever heard of this person, because I haven't. I'm going to absolutely butcher this pronunciation. Friends. Le Herrenberg. Do you know who that is?
I have not heard of Franz, no.
He's a 6'10", 170-pound point guard.
6'10", 170 pounds.
Out of where?
Out of
Antwerp. I need to put
Who is this Pokuševski wannabe?
Yeah.
Can you spell this for me, please?
It's V-R-E-N-Z. That's his first name.
It came up right away. It came up right away.
Yeah, definitely. And the other one
is, this man is a twig.
Yeah. the other one, and this isn't a person, this is a team in the Adriatic League that I've never heard of, that I'm just probably because I haven't followed the Adriatic League, but people who have definitely heard of it. Big Mega Soccer Bet is the team name, and I love it. Philip Petrusev out of Big Mega Soccer Bet. Shades of Dwayne Dedman. Interesting.
Ooh, Dwayne Dedman was my guy. Dwayne Dedman was one player in the NBA after his stint in San Antonio that I really wanted the Bucks to sign.
He's still in the NBA. You can go get him.
So I don't think the Bucks need him right now.
I'm reading, and this is I'm reading the Ringer breakdown on Friends Blechenberg. I love this. There's not a more vocal prospect on Twitter. Blechenberg interacts with fans. He responds to the haters.
Do we want to talk about Kevin Durant?
This guy is climbing up my draft board right now.
Before we get out of here, the last player that we obviously have to address is Ben Simmons. The Sixers are seemingly asking for the most astronomical package in the world. Four firsts, a handful of seconds. I don't see any way. One, the only team that really has the comfortable ability to do that would be a team like Oklahoma City, which does not make sense because I don't think a team like Oklahoma City can build around Ben Simmons. I also just don't think Ben Simmons is worth that much, and I would have said that before this 2021 playoff run. I'll start with you, Zach. One, the theme of the night, like, do you think he'll be on the Sixers at this time, at the end of the draft? I guess I'm going to say tomorrow, but people might be listening on draft day. So after the draft, do you think he'll be on the Sixers? If not, where do you think he'll go? If he is, like, do you think he'll be moved prior to the start of the season?
I think he will be moved prior to the start of the season. It just seems like all signs are pointing towards that. Like, my whole thing has been, after how the last game ended and the comments afterward from your coach, from the other, you know,
just the complete lack of confidence in, like,
well, you, wait,
say, I don't know if he is that guy.
Embiid came out and blamed him for the last play, and, like, he wasn't wrong, but, like, I just don't know how you fix that. Like, how do you come back into that? I don't have a great answer for where he could end up.
That's the thing. I don't know where either.
Like, contending teams aren't going to be able to pay maybe the Warriors, but, like, do they want to take that risk there? Like, they can go get Bradley Beal or somebody that.
Like you just said, that's my big thing. Like, even if a contender can pay, like, there's still a lot of risk associated with Ben Simmons for a contender. I feel like you need a very specific system around him to really take that ceiling out. I know
if the Warriors are going to trade four first round picks, they're going to do that for Damian Lillard. They're not going to do that for Ben Simmons.
Yeah, correct.
Right before we recorded, like, we talked about it before we hit record here. The Spurs, like, that was a rumor that they're talking, and
it's a good fit. No, by the way, I like that fit. I think
I do as well. I was saying it, like, only half jokingly right after that Philly series. Is like, the Spurs have a ton of cap space, and I think they have some maneuverability because they can sign and trade DeMar DeRozan, and they can give him a 1+2, and the two can be non-guaranteed. Yeah. So they can match the salaries. Give a couple assets, right? Like, maybe you also throw in, like, a Lonnie Walker, two or three firsts. Like, the rumor was four firsts, three pick swaps, and a young player. And that's just, that's right out. That's ridiculous. But
James Harden didn't even get that price.
Yeah, absolutely. And getting Ben Simmons to San Antonio would be super interesting. Like, even though I make this point to people all the time, seventh largest city in the country, it's not a small market. No state income tax either for these NBA players who are making a ton of money. Like, him being able to somewhat hide out in San Antonio, learn under these last few years of Greg Popovich, and kind of just mesh into their system and be able to play a small ball five. Like, you can play Jakob Poeltl when you need that traditional center.
You get 28 minutes out of Jakob Poeltl, you'll be fine.
I mean, like, DeJounte Murray, Derek White, Devin Vassell, Keldon Johnson, Ben Simmons sounds like a lot of fun to me. That's a great defensive lineup. They're athletic as shit, and like I don't know what
it'd be a really fun team in transition.
If the Spurs are going to make a move, like, what better player to bring? Like, who else?
What
can
would
they
you
bring
give
in
up
besides Benson? What would I give up? I mean, three firsts is fine because for me, because they're not they can't be subsequent years. So you have to skip the year. So we're not going like three straight years after this. And if Ben Simmons truly is broken, which I don't think is the case, but if that happens, like then you're really up, you know, a creek, all that. I don't really want to throw in swaps. Like that's where I'm dinging those picks that I do have left. So, you know, Morey obviously is a wizard with that stuff, but RC Buford doesn't really make bad deals. Or at least his track record is pretty good. So that would be my thing is like three picks, sign and trade with DeMar. And I just, if you want one of those guards, fine. You can take DeJounte. You can take Derek White. My preference would be get rid of Derek White if I had to send one of the two. Yeah. But I would not give up on Vassell yet. Didn't get a ton of PT last year and looked pretty good when he was out there. And obviously you guys know how I feel about the big body. I'm not moving Kelvin Johnson for much. And I'm not putting him in a Ben Simmons deal.
I was going to say, well, if it's like Keldon Johnson, 12, and another pick for Ben Simmons, I think you have to do that if you're the
Spurs. Absolutely, but I just don't.
Yeah, but that's
I don't
just think so far, doing that. That's just so far off of what they're asking.
Yeah, there would be 13 other teams would jump in at that point.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah. So I guess we'll leave it at this. We'll close out. Steph, your take on whether Ben Simmons or not is moving has been one of the most fun takes I think. Of this offseason so far, because you and another FTN Hoops guy, Alex Blickle, have a very, very...
I straight up stole it from him, by the way. That was just plagiarism.
You're not supposed to... Yeah, so for what it's worth, your name on my phone is Stefano Plagiarism Vaccarino.
Works for me.
This being one of the reasons. But why don't you, before we head out, because we're creeping up on our time limit on StreamYard here, why, like, what you think could actually happen with Daryl Morey at the helm?
So what do you think is the best path for a Sixers championship? Is it building through Embiid, or is it playing with the way the NBA is kind of going and kind of going all in, being completely positionless, and you're trading? And this, the second part to it is you trade Joel Embiid at his highest rather than trade Ben Simmons at his lowest. Right? You always trade your best asset. You always trade your asset at its highest value, not at its lowest value. So you have that in play. Then you talk about where the NBA is going and what is the easiest path to win? And this is what Alex says all the time, and I think he's dead on about this, is the Nets, like, all jokes aside, all bias aside, they're going to be championship contenders for the next 3 or 4 years, and they're probably going to win one or two titles in over these next 4 years. They're just too good. One of these years, they're going to stay healthy enough. The way to beat the Nets is not beating them defensively. Like, that's not the way to beat them. You need to outscore them.
You have to score more than you have to. Yeah, have to take more
shots.
You're not
going to stop James Harden, Kevin Durant, and Kyrie Irving with all three around the court and like beat them because your defense is so good. Like, the Bucks' defense was great in that series, but they played like they scored on the Nets and they outscored the Nets. And injuries obviously played a factor into it, right? Where then that defense does actually make a difference. But when all three are healthy, like, you're not going to D them up and stop them over a 7-game series. It's just not going to happen. So, you know, the argument is, okay, well, Joel Embiid is like a walking bucket against the Nets. They can get it right. But then Joel Embiid has a higher chance of getting exposed defensively against this Nets scheme than it would be if Ben Simmons is essentially your Draymond Green, Superman, small ball, five center, where you just completely, completely space the floor and he's playing the five. You know, I'm shouting out Alex again. You know, I'm not going to bring up Dame. Dame will bring up Net like last because that's an obvious one. But like his preferred trade, if it's not Dame, and I actually think it's really, really interesting, is Joel Embiid to the Kings for De'Aaron Fox, Buddy Hield, and whatever, right? Maybe it's Rashawn Holmes, maybe it's a pick, whatever it takes to kind of even out the salaries and whatever else the Sixers want, right? So you trade Joel to the Kings, you bring in De'Aaron Fox, who is a hooper, I like to say. De'Aaron Fox is really, really good. I think he's like one of the more underrated players, even though he's been on a bad team. You bring in shooting that we know Daryl Morey covets, and you run Fox, Curry, Hield, Tobias Harris, Ben Simmons. That is a team that can put up basket. Like, they can get buckets. Yeah. And like the argument is, like, again, I mean, what Daryl Morey is saying is contradicting this statement, because they're not trading Ben Simmons at his lowest, which is the right move, right? They're asking for 4 first-round picks. They're trying to trade Ben Simmons at his peak for value. He's not actually at his peak value. So this seems like it's not going to happen. But I do think it's really something to consider, especially with the last part where if you go to the Blazers and you're the Sixers, right, and you're Daryl Morey, you say, okay, we'll do Dame for Embiid. I mean, do you say no to that?
I would say yes. I think it, like you said, I think the big hindrance is just the stigma that you don't trade like a.
And it would actually be Nurkic and Dame for Embiid too. That's what it would be. It'd be like Nurkic and Dame for Embiid. That's essentially what the trade would be. Like, if I'm the Sixers, I'm probably doing that.
I do too, but I don't know if Portland would do it, to be honest.
I think you got to factor in that you'd have to build a new arena because the Wells Fargo Center would burn to the ground if they traded Embiid. But if the Portland trade was to happen, I think you need to get Bob Cub in that as well. I think you want to get them back because Portland is stripping it down at that point and building around Embiid.
For that positionless basketball to win a championship, obviously it's predicated on offense. But Robert Covington is a perfect fit for that.
Yeah, and I think if you're talking to the Kings, you get Bagley back in that as well.
Probably, yeah, that makes sense. I mean, like, if you're Zach, I'm curious your take on it, right? Like, let's say like the Nets and Sixers are playing in the Eastern Conference Finals, right, next year. When the Nets go Kevin Durant at the five and they play that just like no defense, we're just going to outscore you every single time lineup. Do you think Joel Embiid is the better matchup to beat that lineup, or do you think you would match them and go, rather like kind of go with a smaller, more offensive lineup? Because like the way that the Sixers are constructed now, it's like Matisse is someone that needs to play against the Nets, right? And Ben Simmons would be someone that needs to play against the Nets. You can't beat the Nets when you're playing Matisse, Ben Simmons, and Joel Embiid on the court altogether. Like, because then they're just going to double Embiid every single time. Like, it just doesn't work.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think this Philly team can be. I don't think anybody can beat the Nets when they're fully healthy. So I guess that's kind of like a roadblock in my mind to even envisioning either scenario. Like, if I had to, I think I'm still choosing Embiid just because of the matchup issue he provides on the other end. Like, and he's a good enough passer to pass out of the double team, but they need to improve the rest of the roster if they do build it. Like, either way, to contend after moving one of those two guys is going to take a hell of a trade.
So and it's never going to happen because you're right, because Philly would literally burn down.
We know about the Philly fans. Like, think about it.
You heard what they said they wanted to do to Ben Simmons after.
Imagine trading Joel Embiid to the Kings for De'Aaron Fox and Buddy Hield. The Philly Sports Talk Radio. You'd be like, who?
I would too. So last question before we sign off. One answer. Like, one just first and last name or last name. Who do you guys think is going to be the most highly coveted player to get traded on draft day?
Zach, can I go first?
Or I'm not saying you're guaranteeing them getting traded, just like the highest chance that they do.
I think it's Ben Simmons.
I was going to say Bradley Beal.
We didn't really get into that either. Like, I think that's the trade the Warriors need to make.
Yeah,
Wiggins, yeah. Wiseman, 7-14 for Beal. Just get those guys out of there. Get Beal in there. You're contending right away.
Yep. I completely agree.
And that's the move for the Wizards too, because Beal's going into his last year, right? So like, and
he does not want to be there.
Yeah. Well, and you're getting to the point where if you don't move, you have six months or whatever to move him, or you lose him.
You're
for
not going
to
get anything. That's exactly. Yeah. Exactly.
And how? Like, the longer it goes, the more desperate you become, and other teams know that. So if you can get that kind of massive package from
value is the Warriors going down by the day. So
you get him out of the East.
Yeah, people underrate that Warriors package, by the way, because like that Wiseman is carries
a Wiseman's still going to be a stud.
The hate has gone too far on James Wiseman.
Yeah, and
he played half a season.
Yeah, and he was also like pretty good.
He needs work.
He was awful defensively,
but the thing is, he's a 19-year-old 7-foot player. Like, he's going to need work defensively.
He didn't play the year before.
He also looked like when he was on the court, he was a dominant producer on offense. Like, but the thing is, that also wasn't an offense that was going to necessarily feature James Wiseman because of the rest of their assets. So, like, I think if he finally lands into the right fit, I think he will 100% be an all NBA player at a point in his career.
Unless he gets traded to the Wizards, because then, like, if you're James Wiseman, you're like, oh god, would have rather stayed in Golden State. That's probably better for my contract situation in 3 years in terms of development.
So exciting! Obviously, exciting time in the NBA. We will be back again weekly. Stefano, would love to have you back for a free agency podcast. knowing that the Nets need to do a lot to dethrone the Bucks in the East. Yeah, now. Bring in the stopwatch guy. Zach, always a pleasure. Hopefully we'll get Adam back from his vacation to the water park. For Joe, for Zach, for Stefano, this is the FTN NBA podcast, and have a good night.
Thank you for tuning in to today's episode of the FTN NBA podcast with Adam and Joe. Please subscribe, rate, and review the podcast.